This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, sweep the remains of language's winter pelt off the floor. Let's get ready for today's show with some word history. Here's the etymology of alien. Used to mean extraterrestrial, it is officially cited from 1953 when it appeared in the magazine Analog Science Fiction and Fact. That sense had likely been in use in science fiction for a while before, 3 decades or more probably. A being from another planet was an extension of alien's pre-existing meaning of a person from another place. That goes back to the mid-15th century or so. The word can be traced back to Latin alius, meaning another or different, and the noun alienus, meaning not one's own, a stranger, a foreigner. It's widely thought to be offensive when used about humans now, and some states and countries have made an effort to replace the wording in their laws. But in the 60s and 70s, alien was encouraged as a neutral term to refer to humans on the move, as so many of the alternatives in use then were racial slurs. However, by the 1990s, alien itself was offensive and came to be substituted with terms like illegal immigrant and eventually undocumented immigrant or foreign national, less loaded terms, for now. The language around human migration is ever shifting, and that's where we're going in this episode. On with the show.
Recognizing someone's humanity is crucial. Calling someone a migrant, calling someone a, you know, asylum seeker, calling them a refugee, these are official categories. But in many ways, depending on how they're used, they can change and they can become more negative. And they also preference how officials are sorting them over their very basic humanity.
This is Dr. Emma Bryant, a lecturer and researcher in journalism studies.
I'm a specialist in propaganda and political communication and the representation of migration and security and inequality in the media. The category of migrant is one that embraces a lot of different groups. This is simply just somebody who is moving from one place to another, and that might be internally within a country, or it might be between countries.
What does immigrant mean?
Immigrant is relational, so it's somebody who's coming into the country. So when the British media is talking about immigrants, they're talking about people coming into Britain. When the French media is talking about immigrants, they're talking about people coming into France. Emigrant means people leaving. So, I mean, people who migrate from Britain to France or to anywhere are emigrating to that country. So it's just about the direction of travel, basically.
And what's the distinction between asylum seeker and refugee?
A refugee is somebody who, according to the Refugee Convention, is fleeing war and persecution, torture, this kind of thing, political oppression. And that is a category they have to have proved that they are in that position. So somebody who is trying to become a refugee is called an asylum seeker. So they haven't had their case heard yet. And once their application has been heard, then if it's heard successfully and it's not rejected, then they become a refugee. And they are entitled to be treated the same as any other citizen in the country. So they should be entitled to everything another citizen would get. These kinds of categories get used very indistinctly, and I think there's an awful lot of misunderstanding.
For many years, Emma Bryant has been studying how the media portrays migration. And in the British press, certainly, there's a tendency to use the relevant vocabulary inaccurately. And whether intentional or not, this misuse can cause a lot of damage.
All of these terms are becoming pejorative, where they once were more neutral. We hardly found anybody in our sample who was referred to as a refugee. We even found somebody who was referred to as a former asylum seeker. They were a refugee. They had had their asylum case heard and they had won their refugee status, but they got referred to as a former asylum seeker because asylum seeker becomes, it delegitimates them. And it's a negative category in the media. these categories have become more and more negative. Even refugee, which you hear more often now after the refugee crisis, it has become a very negative term. And migrant too, even though it was once neutral, has become more negative.
In 2016, the Daily Mail had front page headlines about migrants 56 times, the Daily Express 70 times. Whenever I looked at a shelf of our tabloids, I saw screaming in big block capitals, frequently accompanied by misleading information and vastly overinflated numbers, which were sometimes later corrected in a retraction in far tinier print than the original headline. Migrants seized every 6 minutes. Britain's asylum seeker madness. Illegal migrants flooding into EU. Migrants keep pouring into EU. Migrants pay just £100 to invade Britain. Migrant mothers cost NHS £1.3 billion. Migrant crisis will cost £20 billion. The invaders. Cover up over migrants sneaking into the UK. Britain faces migrant disaster. Britain faces new migrant crisis. We can't stop new migrant surge. We can't stop migrants. Migrant crisis getting worse. No end to migrant crisis. Migrant madness. So-called refugees. That one was actually a headline in the Mail on the 3rd of February 1900. Casting aspersions on migrants is not a recent preoccupation for them.
So the negative associations with these categories really do cloud the way we analyse the facts. The important takeaway is that including as much of the context of why people are travelling and trying to see them as human beings who are affected by these social and economic pressures and political transitions that are taking place around the world is the key issue.
Too bad, Emma, that the tabloids don't seem so inclined to shout indignantly about how climate change or war cause displacement of humans. They also don't tend to use these sorts of terms about Brits abroad.
Actually, people who are British, white Brits especially, who are going to live in Spain or going to live in Saudi Arabia and working for the oil industry or moving to Australia or whatever, they refer to themselves and are often referred to by the media as expats.
Expatriate, noun, one who chooses to live abroad. Censor tested in 1902, prior meaning, one who has been banished, from French expatrié, derived from Latin ex, out of, and patria, native country. Unlike immigrant and asylum seeker and refugee, expat is a word that has become more benign with time.
Expatriates. Now, they're emigrants. They're immigrants to the countries that they have gone to. But immigrant tends to be only applied when it's dealing with people we don't like. So it tends to be never us. You know, it's others. So it tends to be often applied to people with a different skin colour, people who we see as economically less well off, who might be coming for reasons we don't like, and so on. People from other parts of the world are never referred to as expats. And frequently the term illegal gets used and bandied around when nothing illegal has happened. So in relation to immigrant, asylum seeker, and so on, they will frequently prefix that with bogus or illegal. And that should never be happening because these people are not illegal. People cannot be illegal anyway. Sometimes their actions can be illegal, and that's another matter. But the way that these terms get used, they get associated with these negative labels, and it clouds the way that we see those terms.
Be vigilant for the linguistic tendencies that steer one's interpretation of information regarding the international movement of human beings. One pernicious trend is to describe a number of refugees or migrants as a swarm or flood.
Flooding, deluge, waves of immigrants and so on, yeah. Numbers are used to conflate different categories, but also they use an awful lot of rhetoric that amplifies the effect and makes the incoming migrants sound really scary and like they are, bringing disaster with them. Now, that's, it's very evocative language, and it amplifies the sense of fear of them arriving, of course.
And this language of amassed creatures or of nature's force, when used to describe people, makes them seem not like individuals, not even humans at all.
talking about people as cockroaches and so on, rats, vermin, parasites, leeches, you know, all of this kind of imagery dehumanizes people. And it's never applied to white people. It's always kind of been having this racial undertone.
On the one hand, you have this sort of language that strips away agency and like the right to a body or the right to having a physical presence in the world, because you become this swarm, this faceless swarm. You're not a separate entity yourself. And then, you know, when people are quite carelessly lumped in as an asylum seeker, everyone has the right to seek asylum, or a refugee, or even an immigrant. Like, these words don't have negative connotations. So you have to wonder where the negative connotations or the sort of the laden burdens around these words, where they're coming from. I'm Nikesh Shukla. I'm an author and the editor of The Good Immigrant.
The Good Immigrant is a collection of essays about race, immigration and being descended from immigrants. The writers are top notch and the book has won a bunch of awards. Read it. Are you an immigrant?
No, I'm a child of an immigrant. My mum and dad were immigrants to this country, but I think being brown, decisions are made about me as I walk about.
Where are you from? No, where are you really from?
And when people ask me, where am I from? No, where are you really from? I always just tell them I'm from London, because the truth is much more complex than they would be able to understand.
And also much more simple than they've assumed.
Yeah, exactly. But when someone says, no, where are you from? No, where are you really from? What they're saying is, where are your parents from? And what they want you to say is, oh, my parents are Indian, but neither of my parents are. So it's not an easy answer. You know, India only came into existence in 1947. So we were from Gujarat, I guess. My dad was born in Kenya. My mum was born in Yemen. Neither of them ever lived in India. If I went to India, where I'm third generation, I feel so far removed from that. Dad's Kenyan in the same way that I'm British. You know, my mum is Middle Eastern in the same way that I'm British. We're all British Asian, but where are we really from? Who knows?
Right. My dad's from South Africa, but both of his parents are Lithuanian. So he's not really from South Africa, but he's never been to Lithuania. So where are we from? However, I don't get lumped in with the kind of poisonous rhetoric that is now characterising our political debates. So it's not really all about the movement of human beings, is it?
No, it's about the colour of your skin and the accent you speak in. At what point do we become British? Like, what does British even mean?
What does British even mean? To me, it is encapsulated by the English language, this untidy, idiosyncratic, fascinating hodgepodge that bears the influence of multiple invasions and Britain's colonialisation and foreign policy. Take out the words Britain imported, borrowed or stole from countries across the world. Assassin, alcohol, shampoo, gingham, amok, juggernaut, thug. Take out the French that arrived with the Normans in 1066. Justice, marriage, instrument. Parliament, religion, tax. Take out the Scandinavian egg, words that sky, mark the Vikings' multiple skull, incursions for nearly cake, 300 years anger, before the Normans took
Thursday,
over. Take out the Germanic words
water,
that meat, landed around 500 woman, AD when the
king,
Angles invaded,
bird,
followed by the think, Saxons and the
death,
Jutes.
Dog.
Take out the Latin that proliferated during Norman rule, but had been introduced here a millennium before that when the Romans invaded and stuck around for nearly 500 years, and brought Greek with them too. Of course, if you lose the influence of those classical languages, you lose at least 60% of modern English, plus most scientific and technological vocabulary. Oh, and the word Britain itself. Take all of that away. And what's left? Pocket lint. Thanks very much to Emma Bryant and Nikesh Shukla. Emma's book, Bad News for Refugees, is a years-long study of the political, economic and environmental contexts of migration and how migration has been treated in the media and in politics. Nikesh Shukla is the author of novels including Coconut Unlimited and Meat Space. He's the editor of the Good Immigrant Collection of Essays, which is one of the best books I've read in years, and he runs the youth magazine Rife, which is seeking pledges now at unbound.com to publish a new collection by writers under the age of 24. I've already pledged for my copy. I'll link to Nikesh and Emma's work at theallusionist.org/migration. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is halation. Noun, the spreading of light to form a fog round the edges of a bright image in a photograph or on a television screen. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks to Chica Ayres and to Eleanor McDowell and Martin Austwick for their editorial help. Martin also composed the music you heard throughout this episode. Communicate with me at Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter. And you can find every episode of the show, along with links to extra material and the full dictionary entry for the word of the day, at theallusionist.org.